and welcome to another episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we'll be taking a deep dive into a random topic that has sparked my interest. I hope that you're all having a wonderful Friday and looking forward to the weekend. I think I'm a little bit congested today, so apologies for that. All this pollen in the air has certainly started to take its effect. So the spark for this week's episode came from me recently visiting some family in Buffalo, New York, and they recounted a trip to visiting Attica Prison. And I thought that was kind of weird, personally, that you would go visit a prison for fun, I guess. I don't even really know. And so I looked it up, and it's actually really interesting, the story about Attica Prison. There was a riot in the 1970s, and I had started to do a deep dive on that, but I wanted to read the book that won the Pulitzer Prize regarding the incident. So I'm going to do that and then do a deep dive into the prison and the riot when I finish reading the book. When I was looking up information about the prison, one of the things that I came across was the Wikipedia page that had a list of notable prisoners who had been held at Attica at one time or another, and one of them was Willie Sutton. And so I fell down the rabbit hole of looking up this guy's information because he is not just a criminal. He's, you know, they have some notable murder, like notable serial killers have spent some time in Attica, but Willie Sutton is notable because he robbed something like 100 banks in the 1920s to 1950s, which is wild to me. And so I really wanted to look into him and see kind of what his deal was. So he was born on June 30th, 1901 in Brooklyn, New York, and he was the fourth of five children raised in a tough Irish-American district. He left home after finishing eighth grade to find a job. By the time he was a late teen, he was considered a veteran thief, allegedly stealing $16,000 with two accomplices in 1919 at the age of 18. However, in this first instance of recorded robbery, no charges were ever filed. Then, at the age of 21, he was arrested and acquitted on a murder charge. I didn't go into depth on what that was, what that case was. I wanted to just focus mostly on the robberies. He served some time in prison from 1926 to 1927 for safecracking, and after release, he turned to bank and store robberies as his main criminal activity. I did see something when I was looking through his history about his safecracking days and how he was an apprentice to some organized crime and their safecracking enterprises. And I don't know how accurate that is, because one thing about the information on Willie Sutton is that there are several instances where it is inconsistent, and so it's hard to tell what is fact and what is fiction. So I don't really know 100% if he was involved in organized crime at this time, but at some point it alleges that he was. In 1930, in Manhattan, he robbed his first bank and a jeweler disguised as a Western Union messenger. He ended up scoring $129,000 from Martin Rosenthal and Son. Several robberies later, he was caught and sentenced to Sing Sing Prison for 30 years in June 1931. He escaped prison on December 11th, 1932 by scaling the prison wall on 2 9-foot sections of ladder that were joined together. At this point, he is now on the run, right? He gained a reputation as a gentleman during his robberies, with eyewitnesses stating that he was very polite. Despite carrying a gun to his robberies, Sutton relied heavily on his ingenuity, using various disguises to gain initial access to the banks. Typically, he arrived before they opened, dressing as a policeman, messenger, mailman, and maintenance worker, to name a few. This earned his nicknames The Actor and Slick Willie. So he is now out of prison, and he has now escaped Sing Sing Prison, which is in New York. Let's actually see where it is. Yeah, Sing Sing is located in New York State along the Hudson River. Interesting. Maybe I should do a prison deep dives, because I know I've heard of Sing Sing. I'm sure you have too. So anyway, he has escaped Sing Sing, and now he's relocated to Pennsylvania. And his next arrest will come in February of 1934, where he's charged with armed robbery and sentenced to 25 to 50 years at Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. Now, I'm a little bit confused about this because he owed time to Sing Sing, and so I would have expected that to get tacked on to his sentence at Eastern State Penitentiary, but it, like, this 25 to 50 years was just for his robberies in Philadelphia. So I'm not too sure why that was not included at this time, or why he was also not charged with running away from jail. I don't know. The details of the crime that he committed to get arrested at this time are a bit murky. According to the FBI article that I was reading, in February of 1933, he attempted to rob the Corn Exchange Bank and Trust Company in Philadelphia disguised as a mailman. Allegedly, the curiosity of a passerby caused the robbery attempt to be abandoned, and then in January of 1934, he entered the bank through a skylight. However, a copy of a New York newspaper from 1952 states that he gained entry in 1933 by dressing as a cop and got away with $24,000. So I'm not entirely sure which depiction is accurate. The article that I read from the FBI is obviously like a newer article, and then the one from the New York newspaper was a copy of the original article that was posted in 1952. So at 1952, that's what they were reporting. But again, I don't really know which one is accurate. Needless to say, it involved the Corn Exchange Bank and Trust Company, and he did rob them. So whether or not he did it as a policeman or through a skylight, it really doesn't matter because he robbed them either way, and he got arrested for that. It did say in some of the stuff that I was reading that he did not enjoy using a gun. Like, he wasn't the type to just shoot his way into a bank. So that's why he went to the trouble of coming up with disguises and trying to go to these banks, you know, when they first opened, so that there would be no customers there, because he was, even though he was the quote gentleman robber, he really didn't want to use excessive force, which I thought was interesting. He had a gun with him because I can't remember the direct quote, but it was something like, yeah, duh, I have a gun because I'm robbing banks. So he carried a gun because he needed that intimidation factor. And obviously, you know, you're going to comply if you have a gun pointed to your face. But he really didn't want to use those means if he didn't have to, kind of a thing. On April 3rd, 1945, he was one of 12 convicts who escaped the prison. Remember, he's at Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia at this time. So he was one of 12 who escaped the prison through a tunnel. However, he was captured by Philly PD the same day. This was his fifth escape attempt from this prison. This man did not want to stay in jail. He wanted to be out, living his best life, robbing banks. You know, like, this killed me, the fact that he just kept trying to escape prison over and over and over again. And he's successful several times. It's just insane to me. His fifth escape attempt earned him a life prison sentence because he was a fourth-time offender, and he was transferred to the Philadelphia County Prison in Holmesburg, Pennsylvania. On February 10th, 1947, Sutton and four other convicts escaped during a blizzard by lashing two ladders together and scaling the walls while dressed as guards. As the story goes, when the tower guard shined a searchlight on them, Sutton yelled, quote, "It's all right, it's an emergency," end quote, and nobody shot. It is unclear if this is because the guards couldn't see through the snow or if they believed that the convicts had a captive guard. So whatever the reason is, they did not shoot them down, and Sutton and these other convicts successfully escaped the prison, which again is just insane to me to think I don't know. I mean, I know prison escapes happen even till to today. So it's possible. Where there's a will, there's a way, I guess. But it just blows my mind, all the planning and stuff that has to go into this. And I mean, he did do the crimes that he was convicted of. So he needed to be punished. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're supposed to be there because you broke the law, dude. Like, I know you don't want to be, but maybe don't rob banks and then you won't be in jail. I don't know. This jailbreak led to Sutton getting added to the FBI's 10 most wanted list in 1950. This was new, so the FBI's 10 most wanted list was a fresh concept at this time, and so I think he was one of the first batch of people that got added to this list. The wanted posters were usually just mailed to police stations and post offices, but since Willie was such a well-known, meticulous dresser, his poster was also sent out to tailors as well. So his ultimate capture is quite a wild story. In 1952... a man named Arnold Schuster, who was a tailor's son, recognized Sutton on the New York subway and followed him to a local gas station. Now, just as a side note, Sutton did most of his crimes in the state of New York and Philadelphia. And I don't really know why, after escaping prison, so he's escaped Sing Sing, he's escaped the prison in Holmesburg, and he goes back to New York. And I'm like, dude, I get that that's where you're from, I guess, but if you're on the lam, get out of the state, or the area at least. Anyway, I don't know. And I don't know in the 1950s how... In my opinion, I think it would probably be easier to have evaded capture for the remainder of your life if you would have left the city. Although, I guess New York being so big and populated, maybe he thought he could just like blend into the crowds. I don't know. It didn't say in any of the articles that I read, and Sutton wrote a couple of books while he was incarcerated, and I did not read those, but he does have a couple of books, memoir-type books, so maybe he explains in them, like, why he didn't leave the area. I don't know. So, going back to the story of how he's captured, police are called, and two patrolmen go to the gas station where Schuster said he saw Sutton. They get there and there's no one there except for the mechanic. And so they talk to this guy and he says, yeah, you know, they show him, I don't know if they show him a picture of Sutton or they give him a description, but either way, he says, yeah, that guy was here just a little bit ago. And so he points in the direction, like up the street. He walked up this street. And so the cops say, okay, great, thanks. And they go up the street and they come across this guy, Sutton, who was working in the front of his house on his car. So he had purchased a battery from the gas station and he was at his house working on his vehicle when the police officers approached. So they walk up and they're like, hey man, somebody said that you're Willie Sutton. And he denies it, of course, and he says his name is Charles Gordon. And he shows them his car registration and his driver's license that are both in the name Charles Gordon. And he's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Also, another side note, so during his robberies, he would wear prosthetic noses to try to change his facial features. And I believe he dyed his hair occasionally as well. I'm not 100% sure on that. And then it said that later on, after he had escaped jail, he underwent plastic surgery to change his nose permanently. So he had done some things to try to maintain his disguise or his secret identity, but he's standing there and he's like, no, I'm not Willie Sutton. You have the wrong guy. And then this was interesting. According to one of the arresting officers, so one of these patrolmen ended up getting interviewed, like, I think the article was like 60 years after the arrest. And he says, speaking about Sutton, quote, he was a very cool guy, very calm. And so Sutton was so chill that the cops were like, okay, thank you. And they go back to their station. Okay, so they go back to the police station. Mind you, Willie was renting a house that was like within walking distance of the police headquarters, which, like, the audacity level to be an escaped convict living that close to a police station is just off the charts, in my opinion. So the officers go back to their station and they talk to their detective, and they, you know, they're like, this is kind of weird and we don't really know and blah, blah, blah. And so the two patrolmen and the detective go back to Willie's house. and they're like, hey, you need to come into the station because we need to triple check your driver's license. And it says that he insisted he wasn't Sutton, but he answered all of their questions and he's, you know, staying calm, cool, collected. But then the detective said, okay, well, we need to take your fingerprints. And it was at that moment that he said, okay, you got me. I'm Willie Sutton. Now, in one article, it said that they fingerprinted him. And then when they got the results, that's what he said. And then in the other article, it was they told him that it would have to fingerprint him. And that's what they said. So again, kind of murky details. But regardless, the fingerprint portion of the questioning was what made him admit who he really was. Later in 1952, so this all happens in, I don't actually know when in 1952 this happens. Let's just say like summertime because they were walking around. Although I guess in New York you walk no matter what. I forget these things. Either way, so later on in 1952, he was convicted of stealing $64,000 from a Sunnyside bank and he got 30 years added to the life sentence plus 105 years that he owed from all his other convictions. Because remember, he owed money, or not money, money, yeah, but he owed prison time to Sing Sing. He owed prison time to East State Penitentiary. He owed a life sentence to Holmesburg because of his gajillion escape attempts. And now he had 30 years added on to all of that time from his robbery for the 64 grand. He was, at this point, sent to Attica State Prison. So now we have come full circle around to how he got to Attica. Attica is located in upstate New York, just in case you were wondering. There's actually a lot of prisons in New York State. I should have looked up if there was like more prisons per capita in New York or something. I don't really know. I don't really know what dictates prison distribution. I would assume it's got something to do with the landscape because most of them kind of are in the middle of nowhere. We lived at one point, this is just a random tangent, but at one point when I lived in Texas, there was a prison. It felt like it was in the middle of the desert and there was nothing around. And it was really funny, or not funny, but it was really strange because you would be driving on the highway and then all of a sudden you would start coming across these signs that were very aggressive. And they said, do not pick up hitchhikers, you know, just in like big bold letters, these warnings of not picking up hitchhikers. And I thought that was weird until I realized that these signs are located on the highway near a prison. And so that's why they said that. And I've never seen signs like that before around prisons. Not that I drive around prisons, but you know what I mean. So I thought that was kind of strange. Okay, anyway, back to the story. So you think it's done, right? So he is sentenced to all this time and he is gone, or he is sent away to Attica and he is paying for his crimes, right? So you think that the story is over, but wait, there's more. So in 1969, so 17 years he has sat in prison. He gets released on parole for good behavior and bad health. He had, at this point, emphysema, which is a chronic lung disease, making it difficult to breathe. So he gets released from Attica on parole after serving only 17 years of his life plus 135 years of jail time. He dies on November 2nd, 1980 in Spring Hill, Florida at the age of 79. So he finally left the North and moved himself down to the South to live out the rest of his days in Florida, which, you know what, man, good for you, I guess. Over his criminal lifetime, it said that he robbed 100 banks. Again, this is unsubstantiated. I could not corroborate that it was actually 100, but it's a nice round number, for approximately $2 million. And let's just say $2 million he was most active in the 1930s. Okay, so just a quick little Google search, how much $2 million in 1935 would be today. According to a couple different search options, it says that $2 million in 1935 is equal to, $47 million in 2025. So that's a lot of money to have robbed over the course of your criminal career. And really, I mean, it's impressive. It's impressive that he was able to successfully rob that many banks for that much money. And really, he didn't hurt anybody. I mean, he wasn't sweet by any means, but he really didn't try to, kill people in order to rob the banks. So I guess there's that. I don't know. According to legend, when he was asked by reporters why he robbed banks, he answered, quote, "That's where the money is," end quote. Although this was disputed by Sutton, this notion of the obvious being a legitimate answer to a serious question lives on. And ironically, in 1970, he did a TV commercial to promote New Britain Connecticut Bank and Trust Company's new photo credit card program. So the level of audacity and just irony that this man embodied is off the charts, like I said. Now, what happened to the tipster? So this part of the story is kind of sad. So Arnold Schuster, the man who said that he saw Sutton, told police that he saw Sutton on the subway and it eventually led to his capture, was shot to death outside his home, with the assailant shooting once in each eye and twice in the groin. This murder remains unsolved. However, in 1968, an informant claimed to police that a local mob boss ordered the hit after Schuster was given credit for Sutton's capture on TV. Again, this was not ever actually proven to be the case, but allegedly this mob boss saw that Schuster had been given credit by police as being the man who identified Sutton and ultimately led to his capture. And he was enraged by the fact that this guy was a rat. So that's why he ordered the hit. Again, this is not corroborated at all, but that's what the police informant alleged. So sad ending for Mr. Schuster. For sure. Guy just trying to do the right thing. And it may even be unrelated. So it may have nothing to do with the fact that he was an informant for police, but it's sad either way. That's a sad way to end someone's life, for sure. So on that note, in conclusion, what else do you really say? Don't rob banks. I don't know. Or break out of prison. In all seriousness, Willie Sutton's criminal history is a fascinating look at the way someone can use their own wits to pull off some of the wildest feats. And who knows what he could have done with those smarts pointed in a better direction. Just some interesting information now you know about Willie Sutton, aka the actor, aka Slick Willie. And I hope you enjoyed his story as much as I did. I thought his criminal history and his prison escapes were really fascinating, and I'm excited to dive into the Attica prison riots so that I can do a deep dive on that. I think that's going to be really interesting as well. And if you have any suggestions for topics that you want me to cover, you can always email stumbledpod@gmail.com with your suggestions, and I will gladly add them to my list of things that I want to cover. In the meantime, I hope that you all have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will be seeing you next Friday. Bye!